This is the Future of Water, where we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. So let Bluefield be your guide to making better decisions or just to be more informed. Today, it's all about water for energy, the oil patch, and the impacts of global pandemics, geopolitics, and recession. Yikes. So all at once. So in brief, what is a Bluefield analyst's take on the state of things? Well, let's kick it off before we get to our guest. Early on, that is, I guess, 2013 for Bluefield Research, companies and clients were asking us to evaluate the opportunities for reusing produced water, whether it would be in the Marcellus or the Permian and other parts, including the Bakken. Since then, we've been tracking water supplies, transport, treatment, disposal for hydraulic fracturing, everything across the value chain related to water. That was then, this is now. So today we've got an analyst with us who'd like to share some of his perspectives and talk through some of Bluefield's recent findings and water for hydraulic fracturing. So I am Reese Tisdale, and I'm joined today with Nathan Goldstein, an analyst for Bluefield Research. Nathan, how's it going?
Pretty good. Beautiful morning here in Boston. Couldn't be happier.
We always talk about weather when we start these podcasts, but I think spring is here in New England, it seems. Everybody, right before we got on this, we're talking about everybody having sunscreen or sunburn without sunscreen, should I say.
There was a run on toilet paper. There might be a run on sunscreen now. Definitely aloe.
Exactly. Well, speaking of toilet paper, it seems like toilet paper costs more than oil these days. Holy moly, what a mess we've got on our hands. So Nathan, let's talk nuts and bolts a little bit. What's the state of the industry? Water aside, just can you give us a little bit of background on what's happening in the oil patch?
Yeah. So the state of the industry right now, in a nutshell, is it's in a tank. There are really five factors at play. One, the United States has gained success over global oil markets, and that's been underway with the advent of shale gas exploration or hydraulic fracturing. The U.S. has become the largest producer of oil in the world and has disrupted OPEC and the associated price controls for the global economy. In doing so, at least over the part of the buildup, upstream oil and gas companies have become high levered and really exposed to risk. Prior to the downturn, two examples would be Pioneer Energy had filed bankruptcy, and Occidental was struggling to manage its acquisition of Anadarko. Energy prices, along with industrials as a whole, have been soft over the last, I'd say, 12 to 18 months, putting pressure on upstream explorers and producers. At the start of March, Saudi Arabia and Russia couldn't really agree on oil production cuts to boost their prices and essentially said to hell with it and ramped up production. As a result, oil prices have plunged to, you know, last time I looked, sub $25 a barrel. And I think of today, they're beneath 20 still. And, you know, as the rest of the world does, everything stopped because of COVID-19. And as a result, oil demand has gone out the window and there's no sign of it coming back anytime soon. Because of all this, there's nowhere to store this oil. The problem is so bad that prices went negative $37, if I remember correctly, essentially telling the market that E&Ps are going to have to pay companies to take it off their hands.
Yeah, I think the whole thing, like I said, is a mess. I think that if we'll get into this when we talk a little bit about water, but $25, or I guess the futures for, like you mentioned, West Texas Intermediate are about 18. That's a long way from about the $40 a barrel that they need.
They need to survive around 40. To thrive, they need 60.
Exactly. What's kind of amazing, though, is we've been doing research on this, and I was just thinking as we were talking about preparing for this podcast, historically, what's been happening, even since 2000, it's kind of crazy that it really wasn't until 2000 that we even got above $15 a barrel overall. And so I'm dating myself here, but I remember I have a picture somewhere stored away in a book somewhere. I think I just shoved it in there. I was driving through Dalton, Georgia, and where gas is typically really cheap. And I remember gas being 64 cents a gallon, which is just insane. I mean, definitely cheaper than a gallon of water at that gas station. I can see it right now. If I can find that picture, I'll put it on Twitter or somewhere. All right. Well, speaking of water, let's talk about it. So water is the key input for hydraulic fracturing. How much water is actually used in the industry, more broadly speaking?
Well, you're right in that key input. It's an essential component to the entire chemical and physical process of hydraulic fracturing, and it's used in a multitude of ways throughout the process. In total, Bluefield's estimated water demand in the United States is around 40 billion barrels. going forward, most of this is in the Permian, which is our biggest producing basin, and the sub-basin of that, the Delaware, which is now also the hardest hit basin. At well level, we're seeing volumes reaching around 12 to 15 million gallons, or 280,000, 360,000 barrels of water.
Wow. So it's pretty significant. And a key part of the cost of that, you mentioned the Permian, that's West Texas and Eastern New Mexico. And I know we've been looking at a county level, what's happening. And so there are about six counties that seem to be driving all of that activity. So that's the volume. What about total spend?
Well, in the basics of water through hydraulic fraction, there's five different areas: supply, transport, storage, treatment, fractivity like that, and reuse, and then disposal. Now, the total for all this in 2019 was around $13.3 million. And 60% of this, give or take, has gone to transportation, or basically moving water to and from water supplies or produced water for disposal. And for this reason, we saw 34 investments in water midstream operations over the past 2 years. You know, the real goal here was reducing and eliminating the needs for trucks, because I'd say, gosh, in my research, the people I talked to, one out of 10 cars on the road was just for an individual. The rest of them were in some way in these hard running operation areas were just tanker trucks. And that was, again, all in the Permian and all in the Delaware.
Yeah, I think also a big focus on transfers. I know the market as a whole, it's changed. It's really bifurcated, really, from the gas plays in the Appalachian or Marcellus and Utica to the oil plays, whether that be in the Permian, Colorado, get up into the Dakotas and the Bakken. But what's interesting is in the Marcellus, some of those wells are really far from disposal. So disposal is not really an option. So there is a lot more reuse in the Marcellus, whereas in the Permian, there's not. So you can just go straight to a disposal well. I think there are 10,000 or so disposal wells in Texas alone.
There's also a little bit of play of, like, you know, terrain and then local politics regarding disposal areas. The Marcellus, and like you said, is in the Appalachia, and that's mountainous as it is. Then the geology there isn't occasionally the best for disposal. So in some cases, I've had conversations with companies where they shift their water all the way out to Michigan or Ohio to dispose of it.
Yeah, Ohio seems to be the big one. And I know there's been some activity in West Virginia as well. All right, so this is the second downturn, and what's kind of amazing, it doesn't feel like it, but it's just been 5 years. So what did we learn last go around?
A huge increase focused on water management. And by that, I mean, there was demonstrable moves to reuse produced and flowback water and large investments in transfers. And a lot of this was in private equity. It was an attractive segment. And at the same time, what's an essential component is chemicals. And everything needs chemicals. Reuse needs a lot of specifically tailored chemicals for the water quality, kind of like a designer chemical, if you will, per well. But still, water demand increased by almost 100% per well. And so, yes, usage became way more efficient, but it also increased in volumes.
Yeah, that seemed to be one of the big takeaways, is when you're able to operate under a market where oil is $110 a barrel. It's basically, as they say, drill, baby, drill. Just keep it going. It doesn't matter. Just get out of the way. And now that we're at 25, or even before this, even at $50 to $55 a barrel, water management, it takes on a different focus and a need to focus on it. And I think a lot of companies have spent a lot of time dealing with that. The question is, how much blood from the stone have they already squeezed, and how much more can they get out of it? Because it's not going to be pretty for a while. So the $64 million question is, now what?
Well, that is the true question. The supply side right now is going to be and is currently being crushed. Drill rig counts have fallen 42% since the height of the year, signaling a lot less water volume demand. For E&Ps now, major gains in water management were achieved. I'm not sure how many rabbits are left in the hat, but in some circles, there have been hopes for waterless frack using other chemicals, gases, inert gases, but we'll see how far that goes. Competitively, though, it will not be easy across the midstream water segment. They're being squeezed on both sides. However, there are a number of pure plays that need that growth, this little area to survive and thrive. But like we said earlier, this is not going to happen sub 40 a barrel. That's the survive line. You can't do it at 20. You can't do it at $18 a barrel. And really, we're not even anywhere near $40 a barrel. And I don't see how we're going to get there anytime soon with these production cuts. And how the United States right now is opening up again, quote unquote, the economy. And that's not going to put people on planes. And that's not going to put people on highways traveling about. We're seeing little sections of America open up. And it's not a free-for-all anymore. It's going to be a slow and hard road back to $40 a barrel.
Yeah, I think this will be interesting. You know, an analogous situation. If you like look at municipal water, cities, or just the economy as a whole, I think we're still in emergency management mode right now. And I think the oil or energy sector is kind of doing the same thing. I mean, there are also implications for refineries as well, in that they don't have the demand either. So they're dialing back their operations. So there's even a more widespread water impact on energy as a whole that goes beyond just upstream. It's also impacting downstream. I know there are a bunch of ships off the coast of California and elsewhere all over oceans just being used as storage facilities. What's also interesting, just riffing a little bit, is you and I were talking in January, February, we were talking about Saudi Arabia getting into fracking and exploring that. We were talking about doing research on that, and wow, how things have changed.
That's not even anywhere near on the radar anymore. You said as well, the ships on the ocean just sitting out there. I think what each one of those ships costs $30,000 an average, a $30,000 a day just to stay out there. So oil's price slump is going to be interesting. But like you said earlier, refineries, you know, there's a handful of them here across America, and they're going to have to dramatically cut production. In fact, some of them are going to even have to shut down, I'd say. Maybe not the larger ones, but the ones in the peripherals of the operation. But unlike upstream fracturing, refiners have a harder time starting and stopping. They can't just pick up and put down tools. You know, there's a whole process. These things are gazillions of miles of pipeline on these facilities alone. And for water solutions providers, that impact of these refineries shutting down will mean slower demand, and that means slower spend. On the flip side of this, the current administration has made moves to relax regulations. There's been a big push from these companies saying that these EPA regulations are a financial burden to them. And with every penny, literally every penny mattering right now, and the government has said, okay, we'll lever off some of these things so you guys can survive.
I think you raise a good point about the refineries and water solutions providers. We're really talking about two different groups of companies. For upstream, you know, we've talked a lot about midstream water, and that is the water management from supply to transport, to storage, to treatment, to disposal. And there are some vertically integrated companies, and there's some that just focus on specific pieces of that puzzle. And quite honestly, even after 10 years of doing this at any scale, it's a bit more fragmented. It's a bit more Wild West. Like sector. But there are some big players in that space. And on the refinery side, I think, what are we talking about? 130 of them. We've got these refineries. They're not a lot of them. They're huge. And it's for the big players, like the Veolias of the world. They're the type of water solutions provider that has a footprint in that sector. So it's a different class, you know, sort of the big water players, as we might call them. They may be more affected. There's going to be deferred spend. It's not going to go away because, you know, people are still driving. But, and also the refining is happening here, right? But oil is a global commodity, and seeing what's happening in the Middle East or Venezuela, for that matter, or elsewhere, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Just to sort of go a little bit further and maybe away from the energy sector, are we in a Green New Deal? Someone just called it God's Green New Deal. That is, if you believe in God, and if there is a God, that's up to you. But yeah, where do we stand? What do you think?
You never know. As you look around, people can see mountains for the first time from their apartments if you live in those areas. You know, the air is cleaner, water bodies are cleaner. You know, there have been reports of dolphins in the canals of Venice. And that's because we've kind of put everything on hold.
I'm going to interrupt you there for a sec. Guess what I learned this morning? Someone asked me this morning, I got an email first thing when I got up. There have been all these reports about clean air, but what about water? Do you have anything? Do you have any monitoring data? And what was interesting is I was I made a comment about Venice and I said, oh, let me see if there's a picture of Venice's canals. You know, what's interesting, and I don't know whether it's true, so I'm going to go off the reservation here for a second, but said that those photos of dolphins, they're not even taken in Venice. Those were in like Sardinia.
Really?
I'll see if I can find the link. Literally, I saw that. It was probably 45 minutes ago before we were talking. And
well, I'll be.
So that may be fake news.
That's a bit of a stretch.
Exactly.
Well, if there are dolphins, you know, anywhere, it means we've put everything a little bit on hold. So as long as we invest a little bit at maintaining what we've rebuilt through the shutdown of COVID, we might see a fraction of a Green New Deal, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, my wife and I joke, you know, we live in downtown Boston. And now that, as I said, spring is coming or spring is here, the birds are louder than ever. I don't know whether it's because things just seem, it's probably easier for them.
Oh, God, I got woken up by a woodpecker this morning.
Nice. So, all right. Well, I mean, you know, lastly, the one thing I would add is just sort of round this out. It'll be interesting to see, and I don't know if you've heard anything about the administration's role in supporting oil and gas. I mean, there have been talks about stimulus or a bailout of some kind to energy companies. And in fact, I think I saw Steve Mnuchin making a comment that the administration may even ask for a stake in some of these companies, an equity stake, if they're going to bail them out, which obviously there was a lot of pushback. So
that would be very interesting.
Yeah. Industry was raising hell about things like socialism and government overreach. But I would say we are in the state of socialism. We need the government more than ever because they're going to have to bail us out of this. Hopefully we can get our act together and do it.
If it did the airlines, I don't think it'd be a far bet from saying they'd help the oil.
Yeah, and if I recall, after the last recession, AIG was bailed out. And the government ended up making money off of that. Not to say that that's what you want your government doing, and that's not their role. But in any case, you know, newsflash, tariffs are socialist, government bailouts are socialist. So, you know, if pretending that doesn't exist, that's a load of BOLOGNA, as I would say. So, in any case, Nathan, let's wrap it up. So thanks for stepping up. I hope you'll be well, be safe, and be kind.
Likewise, Reese. Have a good day.
All right. Take it easy. So this podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by Bluefield Research, which is advancing water strategies and decisions globally. You can always learn more about us at bluefieldresearch.com, or you can always find us on Twitter at Bluefield Water, which is our handle. So in the meantime, don't forget to subscribe to The Future Water on all your podcast platforms, iTunes, and all the others. That's the only one I can think of. I'm too old for this. So take care and talk soon.